It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Yesterday, it was Vice President Pence who brought the House down talking about the economy and taxes, and he took a shot at one of this crowd's favorite targets, Nancy Pelosi.
Any leader who says that $1,000 in the pockets of working families is crumbs is out of touch with the American people.
But, you know, I've been talking to a lot of folks. I talked to some students from Hofstra walking around. I said, what's everybody talking about? They said, we're talking about gun control. We're talking about what the president's going to say today and how he's going to secure the children of this nation. And yesterday, Wayne LaPierre, head of the NRA, breaking his silence, here's what he had to say.
Evil walks among us. And God help us if we don't harden our schools and protect our kids.
To stop a bad guy with a gun, it takes a good guy with a gun.
Now, just to put into perspective, 2 years ago, Donald Trump did not come to speak. Last year, he brought the House down. They were skeptical. Today, he comes back leading what many here in the hallways are saying is a new conservative revolution in the vein of Ronald Reagan. This is an important speech, not just for this conservative base, but across the country as people tune in. And as you see behind me, they got the metal door locked, but I'm hoping to get in there as soon as I can.
All right, that was Griff Jenkins this morning on Fox and Friends. Sandy Rios with you live at CPAC 2018 on Radio Row. Always a privilege to be here. Let me say the president will be speaking this morning at 10 o'clock, and so you can imagine the security as we came in this morning. And we're very grateful for that, I might add. On the issue of guns, we're learning overnight that the deputy sheriff at the school last night was derelict in his duties, stood outside the school instead of going in and facing off with the shooter. So now we know that the deputy sheriff who was armed, who might have been able to stop something, the only person that could in proximity, did not go in. And we know that the FBI had received all of these very powerful clues, especially the friend of the shooter who called to describe what he was going to do. We know that the things that were in place that could have stopped this were not done. And I think when we talk about, you know, reforming our gun laws or doing these whatever drastic measures we're rushing to embrace, we need to actually do what we're supposed to do. And that might be the best fix that could come from all of this. All right, well, we have a real treat this morning because for a long time, for months, there's a lot of noise here, so forgive me for that. It's not me. It's other people talking. We've had the privilege of watching a personality out of Great Britain that I have thoroughly enjoyed. She's been featured on Tucker Carlson's show a number of times and Sean Hannity, and especially Katie Hopkins came to my attention after the terrorist attacks in London because she was disgusted with the tepid response, and I was just shouting at the television screen because I agree with her so very much. Let me just say that Katie is an economist and an author. She's written a book called Rude. She's a British journalist. She does take no prisoners in her view. She's been described as the British Ann Coulter, which I think is a pretty fair description because Katie's actually got a great sense of humor. Katie, you could be a stand-up comedian.
Thank you. Well, my husband says I'm pretty funny when I'm trying to be serious, so I don't know.
You are. You are actually hilarious, I have to say. She is. She has said many times and will say again to us this morning, that we need to not let ourselves become Britain, and we'll get into about that. She's fiercely patriotic, loves her country. She passed out of the Royal Military Academy at Sandhurst, which is pretty interesting. That's where Winston Churchill went to school, as I recall. She was in the intelligence corps in Britain, and now she is the most read columnist at the Daily Mail. So, Katie, it's a It's a real honor to have you sitting before us today. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much indeed. It's a really, it's a great privilege and a pleasure to be here. You know, being surrounded by so many people who are very noisy, as
yes,
you say,
exactly.
around us.
The loud voices are centering on us right now for some reason.
I know. If you're going to do a very, an announcement, if you're at CPAC and you want to do a very loud greeting to your best friend, do come here to Media Row at Sandy's show, because everyone else appears to be doing that.
Yes.
I will say, to your very great credit, you're doing a marvellous job of focusing when I would be lost. I just sort of stare at the people going by.
Well, Katie, together, we're going to make this work.
We are.
You know, I know you love Great Britain, and you know that you probably know that a lot of Americans love Great Britain, that we consider ourselves Anglophiles. You know, we're hooked on Downton Abbey and all kinds of things. It's our history. You know, my maiden name is British. I was, you know, British in roots. So we have a love and a kinship. We are related. But we didn't grow up there. So I want to ask you, describe life in Great Britain growing up when you were a girl. What was it like?
For me, growing up, you know, I was in the countryside and I had an idyllic kind of childhood. I had my mum and dad. My mum and dad are still together. They're still alive at 70 and 72. And I walked to school. My school was just kind of all British people. We all spoke, you know, English. It sounds very strange to say this kind of stuff, but English was the first language of that school. No. We all spoke English as our first language. And that's a curious thing to say. I didn't remember any fear. There was never any threats. There was never a sense of living in a country that was anything but, for me, a kind of perfect childhood life of feeling free to do what I wanted, surrounded by people who were pretty much like me, and going home to a family that were always there for me. And I think in many ways, it's one of the reasons now that I work in London, or Londonistan, as I prefer to call it these days. But my family, I have three children, they are 13, 12, and 9, and my husband and my parents, they still live in the countryside. And my family are all in the countryside in a house, and it's almost like a spawning salmon or something. You put your children back where you remember being safe. So whilst I travel all over the place, all over the world, and you know, I'm fortunate to be here. I was in South Africa last week. I know that my children are safe in the countryside because they're away from London and away from the focus of attacks, terror attacks in our country.
Well, the thing that I don't quite understand, Katie, is that Britain has always been kind of a melting pot because it had so many properties, territories of all different people, India,
yes,
and a lot
because
of Muslim
of the
countries.
Colonies.
The
yeah.
colonies, thank you very much. And so you've always had a mix of languages and people,
of
at
course.
Least as long as I know, you know, back to the turn of the century. So, but when did things sort of start getting out of hand, and what was the catalyst?
Yeah, so we were always a nation that was founded by people who came here from the colonies very often and wanted to make a new life. You know, aspirational people, particularly from India and other countries, where they came, they became almost the backbone of the country, actually, because they just wanted to work. And they saw an opportunity in the UK to do better for their children. And those children, typically at school, excelled because they came from a home where their parents were supportive of them and to do better. What's happened in the last generation, my generation, the recently arrived migrants, is they bring none of that. They bring none of that intention to try to better themselves. It's not about what can they put in, it's about what can they take out. So they arrive without any sense of the investment of effort, time and expenditure required to improve oneself. And if I give a very specific example, you know, we have a nationalized health system. I was speaking to a doctor, and doctors are notoriously left-wing Democrats, very liberal. And he's a conservative, and he can't speak out in his doctor's surgery because he will be vilified by his colleagues. But he met with me and spoke to me. He is now used to migrants arriving, and they are, when they arrive, their relatives educate them about what they can take from the UK. So they're straight into his surgery, which of course is free, and asking for a medical sick note in order to not have to work. Another specific piece of documentation that means he can get his welfare at the highest end, disabled benefits. And very quickly they start accumulating the things like backache, mental illness, things that you can't really prove or disprove that enable them to get the highest level of benefits. the doctor also said to me that people go into his surgery because they've heard other GPs do it, because of course there's Muslim GPs who are enabling the Islamic takeover of the UK. A letter from a GP which says, no, you don't have to sit the citizenship test because it's too difficult for you because you're sick. And so there's all these ways of cheating the system. And so very much these new migrants arrive ready to cheat the system in as quickly as they can. And that's obviously very disappointing.
So when you say the new migrants, you are referring mostly to Islamic young men.
Yeah.
And so is that a result of the policies of the European Union requiring the countries that belong to take a quota of such persons? Mm. Is that what's happened, Katie? Because Britain already had a government that was on the left.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
Yes. Open borders certainly haven't done us any favour. Like, if you wanted to come to the UK, you can get there. And I spent a lot of time in Calais, in the migrant camp, also in the cabs of trucks, because our truckers are attacked in order that the migrants can stop a truck, get in the back and get across. But actually, it's a lot more organized and a lot more sinister than that. So I traveled from Libya to southern Italy with the migrants. It's a highly efficient, highly controlled, systematic transfer of huge populations of people. The mafia involved, all of the kind of the patrol guys, the guys in the ports say that it's all directed from Rome. So we are paying for a ferry service across the Med. They come up from southern Italy, they get €45 a day, and they make their way to the UK. And even from Calais in France, the lorry parks are paid for by the mafia so that the owners will turn a blind eye, and they load the trucks up with guys at night. And then on the border, the security guards on the border are paid by the mafia to turn a blind eye to certain trucks marked in a certain way. So this transfer of people is much more significant and structured than we might like to believe.
And Katie, I heard you yesterday in a briefing say that we're hearing the same story here. These poor kids, these women that are coming across the border. And you said that your research, at least what you saw there, was you couldn't find any women.
No.
It was all young men of military age.
Yes. And I'm known for being anti-Islam and anti-migration, anti-migrants. I'm known for that position. But I went to the jungle in Calais to live for a few days because I thought, right, okay, you know what? I'll go find these children. I'll go find women. And I genuinely would want to tell women's story. You know, strong women, really, you know, the strong women that I find in all sorts of countries, their stories really matter to me. And as a mother, we all connect with those stories. But I couldn't find a woman. I couldn't find a child. And the thing that you see in our media all the time is unaccompanied minors. And you'll know, I'm sure your listeners will remember the story of the little boy, Alan Kurdi, that was washed up on the beach. That one picture.
Yes.
And that one picture changed the policies of our political leaders towards migration. Angela Merkel stood there because of that one picture and said, we can do this, wir schaffen das, all come. And we make these emotional decisions that, of course, results actually in the fall of an entire geographical area, the fall of Europe.
Which is kind of the same thing as I was talking about in regard to the guns here.
Completely
all emotional
the same.
Decisions. Hang on just one second, just a programming thing. Katie, can you stay with me just a little longer?
Yes, of course.
All right, guys, let's hold the break until 25 past the hour. Okay, so...
we were saying about Alan Kurdi, emotional decision-making. It is precisely the same as decisions made on gun control off the back of some upset children.
Katie, this is something I learned, and it makes sense, a few years ago. In analyzing, you know, we have a lot of talk radio here in America. I know Britain doesn't have a lot, and I want to talk to you about that. But we are finding, you know, that the conservative viewpoint, which to me is truth based on fact, works in a verbal format. We can talk about what we believe because it makes sense and connect the dots, and we can do long formats and radio talking about subjects because our ideas fit together and they're logical and they make sense. The left has a terrible track record here on talk radio. They cannot make it work. It doesn't work, so they don't do well. But the thing they do really well on is television, because they deal in emotion, in images, and persuasion, but not in facts and logic. And so, so that describes a lot. So the world is like a picture of a child washing up. So we change everything. A shooting in a high school. So we change everything. We don't think about it. We have an emotional response. So in Britain, how do you handle that? You do. I understood you do talk radio, but I didn't know Britain really had anything. Like, BBC is the only game in town, right?
I think people are starting to. So my talk radio show was the most listened to commercial radio show on a Sunday that we had in the UK. There is a sense, and you're absolutely right, we're feeling it, this kind of revival of conservatism, this sense that there's a very strong conservative movement that I believe is almost digging in deeper at the moment. It's almost like we've got our heels on and we're pushing down on our heels and going, go on then, try your best, because we're not moving now. And that's kind of building. I feel it. It's like an electric thing. And in a way, that's the truth of talk radio in the UK as well, is that because we have London that speaks for us all the time. London somehow is the voice of the whole of the UK. You know how it is with Washington,
like New York
and California,
yes,
of
yes,
course,
I
seen
do.
As kind of like speaking for the US. Whereas actually, the real voice of our country, the people I love in their kitchens when they speak to me, those are the real people that matter. They love Trump. They cannot stand the Muslim mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, and everything he says about Donald Trump not being welcome in the UK. There are thousands, millions of people in the UK who are going to protest for Trump because of the attitude of our Muslim mayor who's coordinating the Islamic takeover of the UK. And the thing with these lefties is, and you see it in Canada as well with Trudeau, the more they allow migrants to come, particularly Muslim migrants, who are going to vote for them, the more they import their own voters, as you have just the same parallel in California, I think.
Katie, your school system has been a model for the world for years, you know. And America modeled, we had a great school. When I was growing up, it was still really fine. Not so much anymore. So what's happening in Britain in regard to public schools? Are kids still getting a real good, solid education? No, she's shaking her head.
Yes. The idea of that makes me want to fall off my chair and kind of lie on the floor, kind of like a small child having a tantrum.
I'm going to join you because I feel
not
the same.
True. I went to a private school. My parents paid for my schooling, for which I'm very grateful to them. And although it was by nuns, actually, who were mighty cruel, as it goes, put me
well,
off religion
okay,
for life.
Okay, so cruel or dumb? I mean, you know, take it a little cruelty.
Or maybe
a little
I was dumb.
I mean, would you rather have a little cruelty and get some knowledge or, you know, have
that's
a pass and
no
be dumb?
That's true, there was no messing. There was no messing. So, and I would totally put my children at the school I went to if I could.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know what? Yeah, you can't knock it really, can you? But, so, I started my children off in a public school because I had this noble ambition as a young mum that, oh, wouldn't it be great if they saw all sides of the world and mix with regular people and let's make them really grounded. That lasted about a year and we were out of there into the private school system. I pay for schooling for all of my kids. But someone said to me yesterday, oh, is my problem with migrants? They were a left winger. Is my problem with migrants, you know, isn't it really related to the stock market and the fact that, you know, the sort of economic situation is that times are tough and that's why people turn against migrants? And I was like, no, you know what? The reason we turn against migrants or someone like me is anti-migration into the UK is because mums, young mums, new mums, when they apply for a school place, if they've got a British child, you may get your sixth choice. You won't get the school near you or across the road from you or down the street because you come behind the minorities and the groups and the Muslims and the other people who've recently arrived. And in our school system, state school system, typically English is now a third or fourth language. So the languages spoken before English or British or whatever language you want to call our language, American, are Somali, Eritrean, Arabic languages. So your tiny baby at the age of four is going to school trying to compete to even speak English as a language. And that's the reality for our state school system.
Time. You and I could talk for hours, but I want to know, just 30 seconds from you, what is your challenge to us as Americans?
So my big plea to America out here, and remembering that I love my country and I was fighting for my country, I think I still am, is that you do not want to become the UK. Do not let yourself fall as the UK has fallen. And as parents, anything you can do to protect the culture you love and to defend your culture and not tiptoe around the cultures that have come to join it. You do that, you dig your heels in, and you defend your position.
Katie, we're with you. You know that. You and I talked about that. So God bless you and protect
Thank you
and your family, your husband, as you go back to England. I hope we can connect again. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The following is not an actor, but a real life story from Trinity Debt Management. had a lot of credit card debt and I couldn't pay my bills. I was feeling so bad. I got to a point where I needed some help. So I reached out and contacted Trinity.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813 to talk to a certified counselor.
They were able to take all of my different payments and put them all together.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
And they were actually able to work with my creditors. I've been able to pay off close to $15,000 in the last 18 months.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm debt-free for keeps.
1-800-788-1813.
8 Days of Hope started after Hurricane Katrina, and we were blown away by the devastation that we saw on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi and down in Orleans. And then this past year, when we went to Houston, 8 Days of Hope, our rapid response team, we stayed for almost 7 weeks. We had never seen hundreds of thousands of families waiting for somebody to come and help them. And now you get a chance to be the hands and feet of Jesus. March 10th to March 24th, 8 Days of Hope is going to do its first ever back-to-back trip. 8 Days of Hope, 14 and 15. It's free. All you have to do is get to Houston. We provide the food and lodging, a couple great-looking t-shirts. We're looking for skilled professionals, people who know how to work with their hands, and maybe they do this for a living. We're also looking for people that are less skilled but are still looking to be a part of something way bigger than just themselves. Go to 8daysofhope.com for more information, 8daysofhope.com. Come be a part of the largest rebuilding trip ever planned by 8 Days of Hope. Go to 8daysofhope.com for more information, 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
For the past 6 years, the Koontz Independent School District in Texas has been waging legal warfare against a group of high school cheerleaders. The cheerleaders were banned from writing Bible verses on football run-through banners. In October, the Texas Court of Appeals ruled in favor of the girls, saying private speech is a constitutional right. But the school district plans on appealing the ruling. They say the students become representatives of the school when they pick up their pom-poms, and as such, they may not endorse any religion. First Liberty Institute is representing the cheerleaders. They say the school district's behavior is egregious. Want to know what else is egregious? A school district using taxpayer money to fund a vendetta against a group of high school cheerleaders. If the school district wants to bully a bunch of teenage Christians, let them use their own money. Enough is enough. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you live at CPAC 2018, and it's a pleasure to be here always. It's an odd thing that these are kind of my peeps. Doesn't that seem weird? But it is, and it's great to see people. It's a great personal privilege to me, and also encouraging, because I think we do see so much energy. And I would say in the broadest sense, it's an energy to for truth. It's all about truth. Whatever the subject matter, we want to know what's true. We want to fight for what's real and what's true on behalf of this country. Well, someone who's done that and really paid a pretty big price for it, honestly, is the man sitting across from me. It's Congressman Tim Huelskamp. Congressman Huelskamp represented the 1st District in Kansas for 3 terms. And I had a front row seat when he was battling through the Freedom Caucus on so many issues, and then went afoul of leadership in the Congress, was targeted and defeated in his last election, which was a great loss for all of us. So, Congressman, I am happy to announce that you are now the president and CEO of the Heartland Institute.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And we're going to talk about what that is in just a second, but I have to say, as I told you off the air, I go back such a long way with Heartland, because they're Chicago-based, and I was one of their When I was in the radio in the 90s, Joe Bass used to come in and we talked about this whole new issue, kind of new at the time, of climate change and all the things that global warming, I'm thinking that was the term.
Was the term then. It didn't work out very well, so they just changed the name.
Changed the name, and there might be another change, you know. They're changeable. Change, that's their favorite word, I think. But Congressman, let me talk about your background, because I was really interested when I got to know you a little bit, what your educational background is. You have a PhD in...
Actually, political science and public policy, and most importantly, a farmer at heart, and that's where I learned the values that I took to politics. But the connection with Heartland that's so great. When I was in the state senate for 14 years in Kansas prior to that, and then 6 years in Congress, so 20 years in elective office. But the great thing about the Heartland Institute is we really believe, we just don't talk about it, we really believe states are the laboratories of democracy. And so the Heartland Institute works in nearly every state in the union, some places successful, other places otherwise, in promoting free market solutions to problems. And as we sit here today, Congress is out of session, which is a good thing, I think, but 43 state legislatures are in session today, and we're giving them information, giving them ideas, and I think giving Americans hope that there are some solutions to some of our problems, and there's tough solutions out there. There's Americans that can't find good health care, and the left will say, hey, we need a bigger government. There are folks on the left saying, well, we need more gun control to deal with the violence in society, but there are other solutions that are based on free markets and freedom-loving ideas and principles, and that's what the Heartland Institute promotes in state after state and here in Washington, D.C. as well.
Does the Heartland Institute, the chief issue over which I've talked to Heartland, well, education in public schools, that was one of the early issues that was big for them, maybe still is?
Still is. School choice, giving parents and children an opportunity to choose where they go to school. I mean, it's frankly, it makes no sense, and I think it's wrong that just because your zip code is a certain five digits that you have to go to that school, Sandy. Why shouldn't schools have to have some competition? Why shouldn't parents have choice? And when you have these dramatic crises that occur, and the most recent shooting, why shouldn't the parents of those children be able to say, hi, I want to choose a school that I feel safe in? Government says, in most cases, says no. We're going to tell you where to go, and that brings a host of problems. So, yeah, the Heartland Institute has been promoting school choice along the lines of Milton Friedman promoted for decades, and Joe Bass has been a real leader on that. We've seen progress on that, but as we said here today, only 1% of America's children actually have a choice where they go to school.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? I in my dreams, I'd love to see federal education, at least for K through 12, just shut down and let the free market take over. We'd have to have a transition period, but and let there be competition and let the best man win.
Yeah, and then unions would go crazy and oppose that because they don't want the best teacher to win. They want the one that's most loyal to the union to win. Right. You know, but at the end of the day, that's what we're losing. The focus here, the focus should be on the kids, and who best knows our kids? It should be mom and dad. And so that's the solution to many of these school problems is providing choices and alternatives for moms and dads and grandparents and others to decide where their kids should go to school. I got an 11-year-old child in private school. I should be able to choose that. I have the means to do that. But most Americans do not. They're forced by the government to go to school maybe their kids don't like.
So let me ask you a personal question. Do you miss being in Congress?
Rarely. I miss the battle, but I will tell you, a lot of the left's been, Morning Joe and others talking about the Tea Party is dead. Well, the Tea Party actually is in the White House, Sandy, we're taking over, Washington and drain the swamp, but the swamp still exists. Donald Trump has done by putting person after person like Pruitt and Zinke and Perry and numerous other folks in the administration, you find out that's where so much of the power is. So Congress is going to get little done, and what they do get done is probably going to not be good. But meanwhile, if we got to fill some more spots in the administration, a lot of empty slots, but we see great things going on that are driving economic growth for families all across America.
You know, I just heard someone assessing Donald Trump's presidency so far, and the person that was said that in of all the departments that have made progress, and most of them have made some, and of the personnel problems and having no people in place, the Energy Department under Scott Pruitt, has made the most gains and just done incredible things. So let's talk about that. What do you see as the positives that that have happened under the Trump administration on this?
Well, for years, the EPA and their so-called scientists have been misused by the left to promote the Al Gore agenda of climate alarmism. And scientists disagree. I am a political scientist, which doesn't count. But scientists disagree on whether the world's going to end in a ball of fire and we're all going to have, you know, a rise in sea level in Oakland of 4 feet in the next 30 years. Actually, every prediction on the left has gone wrong. And so you say, why does it matter? Well, the left has seized the climate alarmism issue as a way to take away our freedoms. And they have done that through the EPA by taking away energy choices. But Scott Pruitt and the administration and Trump have reversed that. He says, we're going to have the EPA focus on real environmental problems. CO2 isn't killing people. I'm a farmer, so I'm a little biased. I love CO2. It's a darn good thing.
Well, most humans should like CO2. We wouldn't be breathing, right?
There's so many things, though. But at the end of the day, is climate alarmism and this global climate change is a threat to our freedom. So Trump and Pruitt withdrew from the Paris. What a great thing to withdraw from, and plenty of other things. So, but Scott Pruitt is slowly but surely, and actually very quickly, undoing decades of the left encroaching and using environmental alarmism to take away our freedom. So tremendous job there, and we fully support what he's doing there. And so, but yeah, Congress hasn't approved any of these things. They've been done through the executive actions of Scott Pruitt and Donald Trump. So we are very pleased with that.
Tim, you know, there's a lot of stories to tell, but to put some flesh on this, I will never forget the story. This happened not long after Barack Obama became president, of the SWAT team going into the factory of Gibson Guitar. And because they had used some wood and the guitars that was internationally, according to international law, illegal, but not American law. And they harassed Gibson Guitar beyond measure. Those are people who had private lands and would be fined exorbitant amounts, put out of business, have their family farms and homes taken away. You know those stories better than I do because you're a farmer.
I had one in Kansas where it was a small factory, and a disgruntled employee accused them of some violation of the Clean Water Act. You know, they sent in 30 armed SWAT team folks to take them down. All they had to do was call the gentleman and say, hey, let's come and take a look at your records. They sent in armed guards to take them down, and at the end of the day, they found nothing. I mean, it's those kind of things. So you think about how we can create more jobs for Americans and get the economy growing. I mean, you can cut taxes, you can cut regulation, but when a small business still fears the power of government, you know, it's pretty hard to say, hey, I'm going to expand, I'm going to do some more things and be optimistic. But that what has changed in 400 days of the Trump administration. You got all the economic numbers, and they're going to go up and down. But at the end of the day, it's the measure of optimism that I think Americans are going to have in pride and hope in their future. And so I've seen, I think, a tremendous turnaround in America, which I think Donald Trump will say, yeah, he helped cause that. But at the end of the day, what Donald Trump never underestimates is the power of Americans to really continue to hope. And so after 10 years of really lackluster economic stuff going on or not going on, the turnaround has been amazing and been quick because of the American people.
Okay. Programming note, you guys, let's hold the break by about 5 minutes. Is that all right? Can you stay with me 5 minutes more? Is that all right? All right. So I think the point that I'm trying to make that I want to say again is that even though it may not have been every night in the nightly news, those of us watching this knew that Americans in private homes, private farms, private businesses like Catherine Ingerbrecht, who founded True the Vote, was harassed, nearly put out of business by like five different agencies coming into their business and accusing them of all kinds of things to try to destroy them. It was the politicization of our agencies to hurt, especially conservatives. So you're saying that Scott Pruitt, under President Trump, has reversed all those things? Have we cleaned out the EPA? What's the status and personnel and such?
Well, he has more folks that we need the U.S. Senate to fill those positions, and the Democrats are holding those up. So he is doesn't have enough folks over there yet. So, but meanwhile, we still have people that are leaving, and they're slimming down the agency. But the executive positions that he needs to do management over there, we're still waiting on those. And we see that in multiple agencies. That's the approach of the left. Let's not approve the undersecretary, the undersecretary, the undersecretary. And we need to get rid of some of those positions. But key positions are still unfilled because of the Senate Democrats, Sandy. So we need to promote those through. But numerous agencies, and not all of them, I still have a problem with the IRS. You know, that is still, you could have great tax relief, but if you still fear the IRS and you still wonder what they're telling you, whether it's true or not, there's a lot of more work to do there. And so hopefully the administration has appointed someone that'll do a much better job than the last guy, who I still think Koskinen should have been impeached.
I did too.
And they kept him on. I was very disappointed he got to keep his position in the new administration, but he's gone, and they've got an acting director. But we have to, you know, it's a swamp here, and it takes a lot of time to replace and get out folks that frankly, that don't share our principles of freedom.
Let's come back to the Heartland Institute. Then you're the new president and CEO, and Heartland, of course, went through their own trouble. Being targeted by the environmental left because of your strong stand. You have these great conferences with scientists and researchers talking about whether global warming or climate change actually exists. And so just because you did that and printed a lot of information, they became the object of lots of lawsuits. What's the status of that?
Well, we are outspent about 100-1 in the environmental arena. I mean, Bloomberg put in, what, $68 million to shut down the most affordable electricity in America, coal-fired power plants. And we're spending 1% of that trying to make certain folks, particularly those of lower income, have access to affordable electricity. And but, you know, they outspend us, but we've been winning. And with this administration, great steps forward. So right now we're working in multiple states to make sure there's affordable electricity, not just for businesses, but most importantly for those that can least afford the massive price increases by the left and the Al Gore agenda. So we think we're winning and making progress. We had a long ways to go, but we are now talking about energy freedom and about jobs and growing the economy. And who can be opposed to that? Even the left says they want that. The key is our solutions
really
are our solutions. Well, you know, if it leads to freedom,
more than they want that.
I agree. We've seen that. So, yeah, we're still a target by the left, which is actually means we're, I think in this case, we're doing the right thing.
All right. So what do you think's happened to the environmental movement in the wake of Donald Trump's election and Scott Pruitt and others, Rick Perry, their aggressive fight against all the gains they had made for the last several decades? Where are they? What are they doing? Are they just going underground now? And are they still putting up a really good fight?
Well, the Sierra Club, for example, still is targeting every last coal-fired power plant in America to shut it down, which would be massive price hikes on everybody's utility bills, especially the poor who can least afford that. So they're still continuing. They're doing massive fundraising off of this. But at the end of the day, Mr. Pruitt's doing a fantastic job of slowly but surely, methodically rolling back, peeling back the layers of the onion of the left of climate change. And the world, you know, they're making fun of Donald Trump, but you see multiple nations, they actually agree with us.
Yeah,
they aren't following. They signed this accord in Paris, but it said, we don't have to live by it. We'll make the dumb Americans. And Trump stood up and says, this is a stupid agreement. And so it's fantastic. But we have numerous things, holdovers from the Obama era on regulations, that it takes time and going through the process and doing it the right way. And Scott Pruitt's doing that. So what's the left doing? They're raising money. They're going after folks. They're going after folks in this election. But at the end of the day, Donald Trump decides whether or not Pruitt keeps his job, and it's not dependent on Congress. Thank goodness, you know, Pruitt got through there, so he's doing a fantastic job. Zinke's doing a great job. Perry's doing a great job. Even Secretary DeVos, I think, is doing a great job of rolling back the power and control over education. We'd like to see some more efforts there. Just turn it loose and let the states decide. Let mom and dad decide on education. So, in short, most of the gains in the last 400 days will continue forward as we move through the administration. They're not dependent on the folks in Congress. Thank goodness.
All right, the website for Heartland, it's heartland.org, right?
It is heartland.org.
And you guys still have great information on your website that people
we
can
have
use.
Probably the most comprehensive resources on climate realism and plenty of other issues, particularly healthcare choice and school choice as well.
All right, so excellent. Tim Hulskamp, former congressman, always and forever will be Congressman Tim Hulskamp because of his service to the country. And even though he had to move to Chicago to be the president of Heartland. Chicago's a beautiful city. You just have to get out more.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, good to
Thank
see you,
Tim. Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. The Los Angeles Regional Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force and the Department of Justice arrested 238 people during a two-month operation taking down an international pedophile ring based in Hollywood. The arrests include well-known entertainers, community leaders, white-collar professionals, high-ranking clergy members, a California monk, and an Australian man looking to buy a six-year-old boy. We are a sick nation. This is further evidence that we need God to intervene. Nothing short of repentance will change our nation's course.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
On the next Focus on the Family, growing up surrounded by drugs, violence, and extreme poverty had a negative impact on her self-worth. Kim Hamilton Anthony, however, beat those odds and became a world-class gymnast, a shining example of the Olympic spirit. Find out how she found her value in Christ on Focus on the Family.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
The moment you read in the paper that Billy Graham is dead, you'll know that he's more alive than he's ever been before, and I'm in paradise.
Dennis Rainey on the life of Billy Graham.
The thing that I so appreciate about Dr. Graham is his love for the Savior that was steadfast, his commitment to that gospel, the forgiveness that is found in Jesus Christ from shame and guilt and the route to heaven. Few in our day have ever run their race any better. I think he's been a gift from God to our generation, a true gift from God.
I'm not going to heaven because I'm good. I'm not going to heaven because I've preached to thousands of people. I'm going to heaven like anybody else by the way of the cross.
Christ's death on the cross and his resurrection saves us from our sins.
Learn more about Billy Graham, God's amazing love for you, and the ongoing work of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association at billygraham.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump promised to destroy the Islamic State. Now, after years in which his predecessor fecklessly allowed ISIS to establish and brutally control territory in Syria and Iraq, its caliphate is no more. Unfortunately, many of its operators are still at large, and according to the Nazarene Fund, a charitable organization sponsored by Glenn Beck, that rescues Christians and Yazidis from such Sharia supremacists, ISIS is engaged in yet another horror, the murderous harvesting of organs from those groups' children. Yesterday, an audience at the Conservative Political Action Conference heard of a new initiative aimed at helping organizations like the Nazarene Fund stop these and other outrages. The Save the Persecuted Christians Coalition has a creative campaign designed to raise awareness of such oppression, mobilize Americans against it, and hold ISIS and other perpetrators accountable. This is Frank Affney. Find out how you can help at SaveThePersecutedChristians.org.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
What do you think of the idea of a wall on the southern border? Do you think it's positive or negative?
It's terribly negative.
I think that's ridiculous.
It's a bad idea. It wouldn't work.
You hear border wall, one of the first few words that come to mind.
It's a bad idea.
Yeah.
I guess just ignorant and really childish.
Such a crazy idea to just have like a giant structure. I don't think it makes sense.
Do you think building a big wall on the southern border is a good or a bad idea?
I think that's a terrible idea.
I'm against a border wall, but more because I think that you can't stop the flow of people, that people are going to move whether there's a wall or not. I don't think it makes a lot of sense.
I don't think that's going to happen, and it's a very unrealistic thing to do.
People will still try to come over, and it makes it even more dangerous for them, and they're going to most likely die through various environmental hazards.
Do you think open borders would be a better, you know, thing for our country?
I personally think so.
I guess you consider yourself more of an open border supporter?
Yes, absolutely.
Why do you think it would be a positive thing to have open borders?
Well, more mixing of cultures. It's just a good all-around thing, I think.
I feel like I'm open to open borders.
Open borders, good idea, bad idea?
Yeah, absolutely. Open borders all the way.
How can you decide, though, where a country ends and where it starts if there's not a border?
I don't know, just like put a little white line around the... Just kind of make a shape okay. And say, that's where it ends.
Are you concerned that we wouldn't have any idea of who's coming into the country if we just have open borders?
No, I'm sure we could find some mechanism to find a way around that.
I feel like bringing people in is like, it would make the economy better.
I am no more entitled to live in this country than anyone else. I just was happened to be born here. So it makes no sense that I should get all the advantages of living in the United States and someone else should not.
Okay, so there you go. That's one of those videos from Campus Reform that we all go, that's college kids, the ones we're supposed to be asking what our policy should be, because adults seem not to know anymore. So it's our kids who have all the wisdom and knowledge to tell us what we have to do on the issue of guns, borders, a homosexual marriage. You fill in the blanks because they have so much wisdom. I don't know what's changed. I remember when I was a kid, in fact, I just watched a video on the Beatles coming to America. And I remember seeing in this documentary all these 15, 16, 17-year-old kids screaming, and I'm talking about hundreds of thousands of them, not just a handful, crying, weeping at the Beatles. And I'm thinking, you know, it's because, you see, they're only 15, 16, and 17 years old. And they don't have enough life experience to really quite understand what's happening to them. They have a lot of emotions. And those are the people that we're asking what we should do about public policy. But then that's, I'm sorry, I'm getting off the track here a little bit. But Cabot Phillips is one of those wise kids. I know this. Cabot, you're not a kid anymore. How long have you been out of school?
I've been out of school about 3 years now. I graduated from Liberty University just down the road in Lynchburg. And so obviously a conservative school that I went to, but I realized while I was there and talking to my friends around the country how much liberal craziness there was on college campuses. And I felt guilty. I said, I am not enduring this because I'm at a private Christian university, but I saw what was going on and I wanted to join the fight. I wanted to help out, try and take back our campuses for truth and for reason and logic. And so I joined Campus Reform. And our publication online, we cover liberal bias and abuse on a daily basis. We have team of around 100 student journalists around the country that write stories, they investigate universities. We have a team of 7 to 8 reporters here in Arlington, Virginia. And our sole purpose is to bring about accountability on our college campuses, try to make sure professors and administrators are not pushing their liberal agenda in the classrooms and on school campus, and that free speech is allowed to thrive, that free discussion, a marketplace of ideas is created on campus, and that we begin to defend those principles, and that students have a chance to go to campus, spend 4 years at college and make up their own minds about important issues. It's such a formative time, and not have issues forced down their throats.
But do with knowledge of all different opinions and stats and just information so that they can make up an informed decision instead of being told what to think. But Cabot, okay, for those of us that are conservatives, we love your videos and, you know, we're so happy. We're cheering you on. But for the rest of the world, like college, do they actually know about you now? Are you sensing that college students are sort of having an awareness about who Campus Reform is? And are these videos kind of like getting into their bloodstream so that they go, oh, gee, didn't know we were, I didn't realize.
There's definitely more of an awareness now, and maybe not as much among students, but certainly more among professors and administrators. And that's our goal. We want professors to know that if they use their classroom as a giant pulpit where they can bully conservative students, they can talk about how horrible the right is, that they're going to be held accountable for that. And we've written dozens of stories talking about what professors have said in the classroom, especially these public taxpayer-funded schools, what they've said, how they have mistreated conservatives. We had a story earlier this year where, you know, there were professors saying that President Trump is the rapist in chief. There was another professor who was writing an article or had a test. And for the answer, you had to answer something negative about President Trump. So it said President Trump is a blank leader. And all the words were negative words about him. You had to pick one, and the answer ended up being all of the above. We've had things where professors in the classroom said that all white people deserve to die, things about, you know, police officers, all sorts of things. And so professors now know that if they say those types of horrible things in the classroom, we're going to hold them accountable. We're going to find out about it. And we're going to tell the world what they're saying in the classroom. And so in that sense, yes, professors are catching on, but I think it's a good thing because it makes them think twice before they misuse their platform.
Cabot, you're the one that actually is going out on the street and doing those interviews, yeah. Right? That's how your face was familiar to me this morning. So I have to ask, what response to what question was the most startling to you?
Ooh, the most startling. This most recent one we did was quite surprising. We were asking students in Texas, you just played it, about what they would like to see on the southern border. And I thought students in Texas would have a little bit more of an understanding about the importance of a strong national security, strong border. And student after student said they wanted to see open borders. And I initially threw the statement out there kind of as a joke. So you'd rather have open borders? They said, yeah, actually, I think that'd be great. And that was incredibly shocking for me where, you know, many times you hear rhetoric and you think, oh, it's just rhetoric.
It's just a fringe. I happened upon the fringe element of this school.
Exactly. And many of the students, I realized, truly believed this. But there's also the dangerous portion of students that didn't actually support this, but they felt the pressure to go along with it. And that's another problem I encounter all the time where I will talk to students. I'll make these videos. I've been on 50 campuses in the last year filming videos like this. And they all have one thing in common, and then students feel an overwhelming pressure to prove that they are in line with the liberal mentality. And students will tell me off camera, look, I want to talk to you about what I really think, but I cannot let other students know what I think. I cannot let my professors know I'm conservative. I could lose points on my grade. I could be physically threatened. That's what's happening on college campuses. Students are so afraid to express their political beliefs that they're not actually investigating, you know, real truth. They're not learning how to disagree with people, learning how to become an adult.
Did you find any exceptions to that on any of the 50 campuses that you've been on? Did you find any place where you felt there was more freedom to speak?
There have certainly been students that have been, you know, have come forward, and even if they have given kind of the typical liberal talking points, towards the end of the video, I always try to have a teaching moment where I'll ask them a question to try to get them thinking, to try to provide a little more nuance. And there are students that will say, you know what, I guess you're right. There is some bias there in my own way of thinking. I think it's important that I address that. And that's always the most encouraging when students kind of get them to take the veil back and realize what's really going on. That's encouraging. As far as an institutional level, there are schools you go to that, University of Chicago, for example, very liberal city, but the school has made a strong commitment to defending free speech on campus. That's good. There are even some Ivies that have done a good job of beginning to say, you know what, we're not going to let our school become a cesspool devoid of free speech. But it really is not limited to certain regions. Some people think, well, in the South or down, you know, in Texas, Midwest, it's more conservative area, so surely campuses are doing better there. We sell stories from around the country. It's not a regional problem. It really is a systemic problem.
The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, recently announced that the Justice Department is actually going to go on the offensive regarding free speech in campuses. We've had these riots. We've had these notable cases where they've tried to stop conservative speakers. And so what do you guys know about that, and how do you feel about that?
We are absolutely thrilled that after 8 years of Obama's Justice Department, there's finally a Justice Department concerned with preserving justice for all people. And in this case, we've seen at UC Berkeley, there were the riots, the protests, and now the College Republicans group at UC Berkeley is facing horrible barriers in trying to bring free speech to campus. They're suing the university to protect their rights, and the Justice Department has issued a statement in support of those students joining their side, saying we back them up, and it's great to see.
Cabot, you do a great job representing Campus Reform, and let me just say, if people have tips, they can go to campusreform.org,
or send them to contact@campusreform.org.
Okay, and any of these videos, information about what's going on campuses, that is a great that's the place to go for this kind of information. Cabot, God bless you.
Thank you.
And thank you for taking this on. I bet your parents are proud of you, and they should be.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, Sandy Rios coming to you live from CPAC 2018 in the morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.